I guess I should correct that bulletin. It's plus 5 years. I'm 38, so I guess I should tell the truth at the start. So there's no deceit. So first off, I want to thank Bruce and the elders and Bethel for allowing me to share my story today. I was telling Bruce as I came in, it's very difficult for me to find an audience for my testimony. I've given 3 keynote speaking engagements at medical conferences in Toronto, and I've been on CBC Radio 1 talking about brain injury and all the pre-conference meetings discussed. You gotta pull back on your faith and not talk about God. So it's good to be here to share God with you and what he's done for me. So I am a person with a brain injury. I'm trying to get away from using survivor in my vocabulary. I did survive my ordeal, but I am a person with a brain injury. I continue to live with my brain injury and the deficits that were caused by it. So I'm a person with a brain injury. So I always like starting with this quote by George Washington Carver. It just basically says how far you go in life depends on you being tender with the young, compassion with the aged, sympathetic with the struggling, and tolerant of the weak and strong, because someday you have been all of these. And I apply that to how I work with the people I support in brain injury rehab. And it's kind of like I was treated well, I'm going to treat them the same. So it's the golden rule. Before I begin, just some startling statistics about traumatic brain injury. It's the number one killer and disabler of Canadians between the ages of 18 and 40. And traumatic brain injury incidence is greater than HIV, multiple sclerosis, breast cancer, and spinal cord injury combined. And even more startling, it's 6 times greater in the US, that number. So it's just an epidemic that no one hears about. And in healthcare, working in healthcare, I just found a stat as well. It costs the healthcare industry $3 billion a year, $3 billion with head injury, and $1 billion Ontario alone. So we need your help. So my outline for today is before he entered, I'm going to talk before this happened to me, before God entered my life, how he entered, when and through whom, and what he has done for me. I'm very grateful and blessed. Before, I went to Sunday school at the Pentecostal church. I think it was on McNabb on the purple bus. I remember it vividly. I was confirmed in the Zion Lutheran Church when I was 14 years old. And I thought confirmed when I was 14 meant, okay, I got my ticket. You know, the only time I went to church from 14 to 24 was when I had to go to a funeral or go to a wedding. Like, I didn't want to be accountable. I just thought, you know what, why have a relationship with God? I'm really not getting anything out of it. And I did my 14 years. So I was 24 years old, and I was frustrated with life. I was not meeting expectation, mine in society. I think that was the flesh. And because I didn't have God in my life, I really let it affect me. And I had that suicidal ideation. I wasn't getting that home, I wasn't having the children, the wife, the kids. I wasn't meeting those expectations or societies. So I moved out west. It was kind of a quarter-life crisis. I just thought, you know what, I'm going to go out west, get away from everyone, and just make a name for myself. And spiritually, I was empty. And like I mentioned before, I did not want to be accountable. And I always wanted proof. But looking back, I really didn't realize how great I had it. Even though I was frustrated with my life, I did good. Like, I had a loving family, I had shelter, I had food in my belly, things were going well. I just really didn't realize what I had, and it was because I was spiritually empty. So this bridge, it's this where I'll probably cue the waterworks, I get emotional. This bridge is where it happened to me, where God saved me. This is where I was assaulted out in Victoria, British Columbia. I was walking home. I was a night janitor at a hotel, a 5-star hotel, and I was walking home from work, and I was really frustrated. I remember the night before, and this is in my book, for some reason, on November 9th, waking up and looking up at the ceiling saying, God, is this it? Like, you know, I went to school for 4 years. This is what I'm going to be doing the rest of my life? And I actually was cursing him out. I was angry at him. Like, give me a sign. This is it. And when I didn't see anything in that dark ceiling, I just thought, oh, whatever. And so I went off to work, and when I was done work, I was walking home in the wee hours. It was about 4:30 in the morning when I thought of jumping. It was there. That moment was there, but I never did because of the pain it would cause my family, especially my mother. I didn't want to do that or put them through that. And that's the last thing I remember for 15 days. And after my assault, I was on that bridge for an hour before someone discovered me. And this is to me, and this is why I get emotional, this is when God saved me, a non-believer, so I could be saved. In that hour, he allowed me to survive and move on, and not only spread his word, but help others who are going through what I went through. So this is pictures quite disturbing, but to me, it reminds me of what God has done for me. And compared to what Christ went through on the cross, this is insignificant to me, like what he's done for me in my life. So how and through whom, to expand on what happened to me, I was assaulted from behind. That first blow knocked me unconscious. And I think that was God at work as well. I don't remember it, so I don't live in fear. If someone would have said, you have this job downtown Toronto, before this happened to me, I would have probably went, no, I'm not interested. I'm scared. I'm fearful. But now I work in Toronto, and I really don't worry about anything because I know where I'm going now. Like, you know, I got God in my life. I got Christ in my life. So I suffered a traumatic brain injury, and it resulted in a 15-day coma. And at the closest to death, I remember my mother describing this because I don't remember that first month. And I think that was God at work again. I don't remember that first month because I think it was quite horrific. And I was close to death. My resting heart rate was 180. Atrophy was setting in, which meant my arms and my muscles were caving in. I was closest to death, and I was put into ICU. And my mom and my stepfather, who was instrumental in my recovery, prayed and gave me to God. And my mom came in to say goodnight to me, and I said, hi, Mom. I woke up. So it was just kind of like all those things, God intervened and saved me. And basically, I was stripped of everything and was a newborn. I could not walk. I could not write. I could not feed myself. I couldn't even swallow. I was stripped of my emotions, even my taste buds. And to quote my book, my brain had received such trauma that it was essentially jolted out of order and needed to rest to reset itself. The question was whether my brain would turn on again, and if it did, could remember how to start everything and function normally. So once I woke, I spent another month in the rehabilitation hospital, then I had 9 months of outpatient therapy, where I'd go into the hospital to receive my treatment. So 1 year, I find, is nothing. Like, I'm very fortunate. I had a very spontaneous recovery from my brain injury because the outcomes are very varied, and I'll discuss that as we move on. So followers, Bob, I'm going to share him with me, and he's in my book. He was the first person who I opened up to in the rehabilitation hospital, and this, to me, was the Lord working, like why I opened up to him. Like, I was very, because of my brain injury, I was very isolated. I didn't want to open up to anyone. But the 79-year-old man whose complications were brought on by heart surgery couldn't walk because there's a complication that affected his spine. And I asked Bob, this shows you what type of man Bob was and how instrumental he was to me. I asked him, why didn't you ever pursue this doctor legally? He's like, well, you know what, Greg? Doctors do make mistakes. It's just theirs are more profound and we see them. But I'm sure he'll do amazing work. Turns out his neurosurgeon was the neurosurgeon who worked on me. So it just amazed me. And Bob just led by example for me. He ended up living in extended care at the facility where I went for outpatient therapy. And I'd go and visit him for coffee every day. because I loved him. Like, he was an amazing man, and he would talk to me about the Lord, and he was really instrumental in my spiritual journey. But not only that, but getting into the helping profession, I'd be in that facility and go, Greg, go help that person with their coffee. Go there, go help this person. And I really fell in love and grew confidence with the helping profession. And he always said he would walk again. And in my early on in my spiritual journey, I thought, oh, Bob, I think you're not going to walk again. But now I know what he meant by that. He is walking again, and he's looking down on me and looking down on us. So I owe a lot to Bob in being here today and helping others. So this is a poem I wrote. It's basically based on what Bob taught me and all those coffees we had together in that time in the inpatient rehab hospital. Nobody knows what tomorrow brings. By loving, giving, caring, and sharing today, lets one know that if tomorrow does not come, today is a good day to be the last. And that's something Bob really stressed with me, and I owe a lot to him. Love you, Bob. I know he's looking down on me right now. Another person who I met through rehab was SK, and why I have a picture of her was she really gave me perspective. She had progressive multiple sclerosis, and she didn't have the power to scratch her own nose. She controlled her wheelchair by puffing in a straw, and she felt for me because my disability was invisible. And it just took my breath away, and that was God putting these people into my life to show me the way. Like, not only help others, but Greg, there's no such thing as a bad hair day. Like, you know, he really showed me the way through the people he brought into my life during my recovery. So what has he done for me? I couldn't walk, and now I ran and completed 4 marathons, and I met my goal of under 4 hours, so I'm really proud of that. 3 hours, 54 seconds, I wish. And I think my marathon running days are over. But, you know, I'm very grateful for him. I owe it to him. Like, and that's why I do these things, because I was stripped of everything, and I've been giving them back. I'm going to literally run with them, pun intended. Like, he was so good to me. Now I want to do the same. And all these gifts he gave back to me, I really want to enjoy. I didn't have the ability to write, and I published a book in February 2006, and I just find that amazing, and I always would pray to God. I remember I was finished my book in 2001, and my colleagues at work would say, you know what, Greg, maybe cool it on trying to get this thing published, because I'd have rejection letters at home, and they'd be like, you know what, I think, just give it up. And I said, you know what, I'm praying about it, I'm just going to keep on doing it. I ended up getting my publisher in the United Kingdom. I just said, you know what, I'm going to be persistent. God's going to help me through this. And sure enough, I got my book published. So I owe running those marathons and my book to him. Like, he was there for me. So as a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. I was talking to Bruce earlier. I've been working with fellow persons with a brain injury since 7 months post my injury. And I'm doing his work. Like, I've learned what to do. Like, I build rapport with the people I support because I've been there. And God's allowing me to do this. Like, I've worked at Toronto Rehab for 10 years. I work at the brain injury, I sit on the board at the Brain Injury Society of Toronto. And something dear to me is Journey Rehabilitation Therapy. It's a little company. I'm having troubles getting started. But it's with people with like minds like me. Like, my sister in Christ, Tricia, works with me on that. I really think we can get out in the community and help others who are suffering through what I went through. So that's really dear to me and a work in progress. And like the running the marathons in the book, I know God isn't done with me and he'll help me with that. How am I for time? Okay, we better have a lot of questions. So the reason why I have this up here is volunteering. I started to volunteer, like I said, about 7 months after my injury, and it's really important as Christians to get out there and help others, and I know we do that, and Bethel's amazing for that, but especially with something dear to me like brain injury, my mother and I were discussing this little man I swam with just 7 months after my injury, and my balance was impaired, And they were calling on me, someone who was early in his recovery, to go and support him. And looking back, not only was it dangerous, but was that all they could rely on, was others like him? And I thought that was really sad looking back. Like, we get it out there and help these people. And in head injury, like the title of my book, as you can see from him, and there's varying outcomes. It's not only physical, but it's mental. Like, my disability is invisible. I have deficits that you do not see. And I think we really got to remind ourselves of that when we may encounter someone with a brain injury and understand that they may have a brain injury. I remember before this happened to me, I was ignorant of brain injury. And if I saw someone on the bus talking to themselves, the first thing I thought to myself was, maybe, you know, there's a mental issue there, this or that. But I've learned they could have easily fallen in the shower. Like, you know, head injury really can affect you that way. So this is my spiritual journey began about 2 months, 3 months after I woke from my coma. I really started looking into it because I questioned my mortality, and my stepfather Brian and my mother really helped me through it. And I remember, I'm not too scripturally sound, but just, I love Romans. Like, I was scanning through the Bible, and I saw this verse, and I just applied it to what I was going through, and it really hit home. I'm like, my life is in the good book. Like, that's my life. And we rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. Not only so, but we also rejoice in our suffering, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, character, and character, hope. And hope does not disappoint us, because God has poured out his love into our hearts by the Holy Spirit whom he has given us. And that's my life right there. And just God continues to work. Like, I look at what I'm doing today at Easter, and Bruce giving me this opportunity. It just, he's not done with me. And by sharing with you and the congregation, we can out there and support those with brain injury. So Bruce and Bethel, I owe a lot to you. Thank you. So I always look at this. My mom, I always get frustrated. I mentioned this to Bruce earlier too. I don't know if it's a Toronto thing. I hope no one's from Toronto. I've been there for 10 years now, but I find being a Christian, I'm a minority. Like, I think people look down, don't look down on me, but I think they're ignorant of my faith. And it frustrates me because I see how they act. I know they don't act like Christ. They don't act like us. And my mother always said, you got to lead by example. And maybe I'll say, you know what, there's a Greg guy, and he's doing really good, caring things. And he's a Christian, too. Maybe I can learn from him. So I love this quote by Edmund Everett Hale. I'm only one, but I'm still one. I cannot do everything, but I can still do something. So we can still do something and impress on people to maybe look into not only their faith, but look into themselves. So questions. I need about 10 minutes for a slideshow with music, so I think I'm doing all right for time. I hope there's questions. Sadly, they linked what happened to me to 3 other assaults and a murder. Like, it went on for a bit in Victoria. So I contacted Victoria Police in 2000, and the file was basically a cold case. They couldn't find anyone from. No, there was no signs of robbing. And you'll read in the book, I didn't mean to do it, but I left my wallet at home just in case I ran into someone, so it took them a while to identify me to my family. So,
I do have one other question. Mm-hmm. What are some of your deficits?
I would say my biggest deficit is fatigue. Like, I worry, I get emotional thinking about having a family, but I know God will provide me with that energy if I do have a family. But I need my 7 to 9 hours of sleep, and I do nap a lot on the weekend. And I find as I get fatigued, other functions like my speed of processing, my word retrieval, things like that start to wane a bit. So yeah, fatigue affects me greatly. And I have organizational deficits that I overcompensate for. Like, I'm very organized, and I think it's kind of like a double-edged sword that tires me out too. So I'm quite organized, but I think it can wear on me as well. Andrew?
Mm-hmm. Now, is anger one of your huge deficits?
It was at the start. Like, I had to see an anger counselor for like 20 sessions, and it's hard for me to explain, Andrew, because I have been blessed with, and this is kind of, I don't want to say it's a deficit, because I don't know how it sounds, but because I've been so blessed, and with the people I work with, I want them to have the recovery I have. I get angry at myself for getting angry at the small things. Like, I have a right to maybe get angry at things, but it really hits home with me, and that was really early on in my recovery. I'd be like, Greg, and I'd turn it inwards and get angry at myself because I've been so fortunate and blessed with my recovery. So yeah, anger and those mood swings. And I'll always have mood swings, Andrew. Like, I'm either really high or either really low. Like, I explain it like people without a brain injury are going at an even keel and they blip up and down. But with me, I'm either or down, and it's hard for me to find that even keel. I'm working on it. So right now I'm up. No, thank you. Yeah.
From what you're saying, then, does that mean that there are possibly a lot of people out there with a brain injury and they don't even know it?
Oh, for sure. Like, those numbers don't really count concussions, and that's something we're working on at Toronto Rehab. Like, those concussions, like you think of Bob Prober and all these hockey players, the effect those concussions will have in their later years. And we're trying to get away from even calling concussions, but calling them brain injuries, because that's what they are, right? And there's so many of them, and I just don't think people report them, right? And it may explain why someone's sleeping in or maybe not initiating or becoming angry quite easily. It might be from that hit to the head that they received through sports or through a fall, or in my case, an assault.
You have to be unconscious?
Yeah. Yeah. No, not really. Like, I don't think there is. That's a tricky question. I don't want to answer something I can't answer. I don't think you have to be unconscious, like, because a lot of times people think of you got to be unconscious. But if you look at those hockey players, they don't become unconscious, but the sheer force that their brain receives. Like, to explain that better, is I received a counter coup injury, and what that meant was I was struck at the right backside of my head, and I received the most damage at the frontal lobe of my brain because my brain moved and struck the front of my skull. So those linear and angular forces may not leave you unconscious, but they move your brain around in your skull, and that causes a brain injury. So yeah, I would say you don't have to be unconscious to receive a brain injury. I would say about 3 months after. Like, I went to a psychologist to deal with the trauma, and I really had troubles with my mortality, and you could tell I still needed work on finding the Lord, because I had this thing, I was greedy. I didn't want to go through what my family went through with me. Like, I didn't want something to happen to my mom or my dad, what happened to me. It was like, I wish they would have threw me off that bridge. Like, I wanted to die. I don't want to go through what I went through. I was really questioning my mortality. And my psychologist, I don't know if this was ethical or not, she gave me a book, and she just said, Greg, you know what? This helps me. And I'm not trying to steer you anyway, but just read this book. And it was on Christian philosophies. And I started to read it, and it just started to kick in. And then I was introduced to that scripture by Brian, Romans, and I just like, you know what, this is making sense to me. And then I started to piece everything together, and it made sense to me. So about 3 months after, I would say.
But you're working at Toronto Rehab. Did you have to go back to school and take courses?
Yep, I went back to Sioux College, and I graduated from the Occupational Therapy Assistant and Physical Therapy Assistant program with honors, so I'm proud of that. But again, my head injury showed show there. Like you, sometimes you don't see it on the tests in the hospital. But when I went back to school, I gained 40 pounds. The old Greg could go and party, could have a part-time job and do well at school. I could only concentrate on one thing. So that's, again, dealing with my fatigue. I had to really prioritize. So it was just school for me. So. No, I didn't. That was a while ago. I think times have changed. Special needs wasn't too helpful for me because I think they were ignorant of brain injury. They just said, oh, you can extend the course another 6 months. And I'm just kind of like, that really doesn't help me. So I just thought, you know what, I'm going to do it, gain the weight, and just concentrate on school. So that's what I did. No, they're later on, as I mentioned earlier, they linked it to other crimes. Sadly, those people didn't come out of it as well as I did, and the police hypnotized me for evidence. And through that hypnotherapy, it was determined it was more than one person. So that's the only thing. Because that first blow was from behind, I didn't see anything. It knocked me uncold. I really don't remember anything.
You were just swarmed?
Yeah, I would say that's a good way to say it. Like, I was attacked by more than one person. So. No reason. Random act of violence is what the police determine it as. So, yeah. And again, I think that's God at play, that I don't remember that. Like, I think I'd be more fearful if I do remember it, but I don't. And that's part of brain injury as well. There's amnesia involved. So I think it's a good thing I don't remember what happened that night. Ooh, that's a in-depth medical question. I got to think about that for a minute. That's very tricky to say on determining it, and that's something we have troubles with at work, like if it's mild, moderate, or severe, right? I'm going to have to get back to you on that question. It's a very good question. I wish I had the answer to it. Just one sec, Andrew. I'll get this gentleman. Oh.
Kind of in the answer.
Okay. Oh.
Like, when I was hit by the car, I was in a glucose coma scale of 5. And your dead people are 3, and all of us right now were 15. And so I was 5. So I was very, very sick. I have no clue what glucose coma scale rate you were, but.
Yeah, I was low at the start too. Like I think, and you've heard this too, Andrew, kind of expand on the numbers. I think if you're unconscious for longer than 6 hours, it's a severe brain injury. So that's how they gauge that, the severity of it. But again, it all depends on the deficit you're left with, right? So. That's a great question. I always dwell on that one, but I think that was evil who did that to me on the bridge, and it was God who pulled me through everything, and now look what I'm doing. I'm grateful for it. And
the suicidal tendencies of God, right?
Yeah, like I'm so grateful and blessed. Like, look what he's done for me. Like, he's found me, and now I'm kind of running with him, so I'm very grateful. Well, I am through my work, and that's something I've given a talk at a school before down south about that. Like, it's very difficult to broach the subject of Christianity. Like, I pray for the people I work with, but if I tell them that I am, it could get me in trouble because it's so multicultural, right? So I just do it by my actions. I wear my cross, and I'm proud to say I'm a Christian. And I lead by example, like that quote says. Like, it's very difficult for me because of where I work, right? It's an ethical thing with healthcare, and I'm sure there's someone in here who works in healthcare. It's a tricky thing to broach the subject, but they can't muzzle me from praying when I get home. So that's what I do. So, and through my actions. So. Just to keep on making people aware of brain injury, like persons with a brain injury, to really help them, because there's so many of them out there, and I think it's ignored. And that's what I think God wants me to do, is to be that spokesman and be that champion. And I'm trying to do that. And I speak at conferences and all that. And I have to admit, I mentioned earlier at those conferences, I always end on a spiritual note, so it's kind of, I don't know if it makes people mad, but I always throw it in at the end, and it's kind of like, ah, too late. You know, it's very important to me to do that. I'm like, okay, I'm going to show, you know what I talked about, this guy's together, and he's a Christian, so that's a plus. So, yeah, just to make people aware of brain injury and to help others, right, with not only brain injury, but those invisible disabilities, like mental disabilities, intellectual disabilities. I should have gotten an agent, but that's another story. It's not doing too bad. Like, my orders, it's all online on a website. Any website you can go to and order it. But it comes and goes. Like, my editor's impressed that it still has sales once in a while. Like, it has a long shelf life. So I'm not giving up on it. We'll see what happens, right? Yes? Yes, I probably give more than I sell, but you know what? I think that's part of my mission and part of God doing what he did for me. I don't mind doing that. Like, I use it as a tool at where I work and give it to people, and it is spiritually based. So I guess to answer your question more in depth, I give them that book, and they take it with them and hopefully look into the relationship with God more closely, or if they don't have one, to look into it. I really can't say, put it in numerical value. Like, I did an interview with my little sister on the radio in Windsor yesterday, and we talked about this type of thing. And I was told I had a fair recovery. When I first heard that, I'm like, wow, I'm doing great. I've had a full recovery. But with brain injury, I have deficits that were brought on by it, so I'll never be the old Greg. And I'm not disappointed at that, but I'll always have those deficits from my brain injury, so it'll never be 100%. I don't think there really is 100% recovery from it.
What did you do before you were injured?
I was a night cleaner, but I was graduated from business admin, and I was actually, again, God at play. I was going to start a job at the Bay in the menswear department on November 11th, and this happened to me on November 10th. So I don't think I would have been happy with what I was doing, so it's glory to God.
Has the education you've received since, has that been real difficult to do, or did that come readily?
Just education with what I work with? Like I mentioned earlier, I really had to just concentrate on school, and I gained a lot of weight, and it was really tiring and taxing, but I made it through all right. So, yeah, and I think I owe that to God as well, but my grades were great, and I think that's just God telling me to move on. And right now I'm working at a job that you need a master's degree, and I'm just doing it with my clinical work and my how I work with people. So that means a lot to me as well.
I'm amazed at how anyone could survive being hit over the head with a baseball bat. And when I saw your picture up there, it reminded me of Dr. William Pettit from Connecticut. Are you familiar with that case?
No, I'm not.
How could you survive that, and him survive that, and her just fall over and die?
That's something that I will share with Everett, like Andrew too, like timelines and recovery from brain injury, what makes it so difficult, it's not in the textbook. Everyone is different. Like what happened to Natasha Richardson or Dr. Pettit, it's different with everyone. Like it really doesn't, it matters where you're hit and what side of the brain is damaged, but it just, your recovery is different and how you heal and how the brain heals is different in everyone. So there's really no textbook answer. And I was told whatever I was left with after 2 years, I'd be left with. But I've also heard whatever, maybe in 15 years down the road, something will click on. I'm going to think that way instead of the two-year route. And that's what I tell the people I support and work with, like to think that positive. And I mentioned fatigue. I know when I have children, God will give me this strength and this energy to work. So it's just that aspect, but it's different in everyone. And that's, I think, why it's maybe hidden head injury, that it's so varied in the outcomes, right? It's not like a broken leg. It just doesn't mend. It's different in everyone.
Are you married?
Sadly, no. But that's all right. it's a work in progress.
No.
Because it's traumatic, it happened to us. It's an outside force. And then I've worked, you know, there is, and to cover the gamut of brain injuries, there's non-traumatic brain injuries as well, ones that are congenital, anoxic, which is oxygen cut off from the brain. So there's a wide variety of them, the ones we've suffered, Andrew. And I think it just, the list can go on and on. So. Say again? Oh, I think they are. Like, you know, you look at, I don't want to keep up bringing athletes, but I think if you look at Eric Lindros or someone like that, concussion after concussion after concussion, it is cumulative effect. And I think Bob Probert donated his brain to science and it showed the effects his career had on his brain. And it can be said about that wrestler, Chris Benoit, like he had the brain of an 85-year-old with Alzheimer's from the repeated blows to his head. So it's very cumulative. So I'm going to lend. Do you think we can figure this out? Give it a try. I got a little slideshow that's kind of showed my journey with a song that's moving to me. So here we go. Hopefully this works. Thanks, Len. Bye.
as we drooped back.
I'll just, I guess, I'll end with the last thing I end in my book, if I can find it. Where is it here? They never use these. Now look, falling apart at the end. Where is it? I'll end my testimony with a question God knows the answer to. Why not, Greg? So thank you.